Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we're going to be discussing in this episode originally came out on December 24th, 2008, and because of the Christmas and New Year holidays, this wound up being the last shipment for the year. And we're going to start off in DC with Greatest Hits number 4 from DC's Vertigo imprint. I don't know about you, Bob, but I have been loving this series. I picked it up originally because I thought the concept was kind of interesting. It's basically, what if the Beatles were superheroes?
Yeah, they've really hit this one out of the park. I mean, it's got a great creative team. And David Tishman, what else has he written?
I don't know, but I'd like to find out.
Yeah, let me do a quick search on that. You can give some thoughts on that issue on this issue and the series in general. I'll do a quick look up on this one.
The basic thing with this series is it comes down to, can you buy into the premise of a superhero team very reminiscent of the Beatles with a history very similar to that, except instead of being musicians, they're superheroes. If you can't wrap your mind around that or that premise turns you off, skip this book. If, however, you're okay with that idea, you like that idea or are intrigued by it or whatever, or at least willing to run with it, this is worth picking up. This is a fun series. It's got solid art, great writing. It's one that, I mean, I'm no expert on the Beatles by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not a huge music fan, but I can see where they're kind of going with the history of the Beatles as kind of a template and tweaking it here and there and playing with it and just having fun with it. And this is a very interesting vantage point and vehicle for a superhero team, and one that, while the concept is not necessarily brilliant or original or anything of the sort, it's a really good execution of this. And much better than you might expect from the basic, almost cliche premise of, you know, a band as a superhero team kind of analogy. The art on this, I think, really fits the book. It's got a realistic enough style that you can kind of tell which hero is supposed to be almost which Beatle and things like that. And it's a lot of fun, both, I think, from a kind of that music perspective and also from that superhero perspective. It's a really good blend of the two.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Glenn Fabry and Gary Erskine, I like their art even by themselves, you know, combining the two of them with Glenn Fabry on pencils and Erskine on inks. Very, very nice looking series. It flows well. The concept has been intriguing throughout this issue. The thing I like about this series also is that each issue out of the six-issue arc has told almost a complete story within the, you know, kind of a new time frame, but there's kind of overarching thread that's running through all six issues. But I've been able to enjoy each issue with a satisfying chunk of story by itself, which I always enjoy when a miniseries is done that way and not just something that, it's like, well, why am I bothering getting this monthly? It's very difficult to understand, except read as a whole. This one reads nicely in monthly format, and I have been reading this monthly as it comes out and have been enjoying it each and every month. Just quick on Tishman, he's done a lot of work with Howard Chaykin. He co-wrote the American Century series with Chaykin, also the Bite Club and Bite Club Vampire Crime Unit series. He has done the Star Trek Year 4 mini from IDW, as well as the Star Trek Next Generation, the Space Between miniseries.
Okay.
That's among the things that he's done.
Yeah, he's doing a great job here. I've read some of his Star Trek stuff, but I think this is, out of everything of his I've read, which admittedly is not much, this is definitely the best.
Well, I read Bite Club, and I liked Bite Club. I read American Century. It was okay. It's nice to see him. I mean, he's someone, it's almost like, I don't know how this works, and I'm just, you know, wildly speculating here, but it's sort of like when Bill Willingham is working with Matthew Sturgis, right? And he was co-writing a lot of things with him, and it's almost like, I don't know, it's almost like one of these really prolific writers sort of takes on an apprentice, you know, or a partner, kind of teaches them the ropes, and then that person goes off on their own and starts doing some really good stuff. And, you know, I found that same thing with Sturgis on some of the stuff he's done now outside of the context of Bill Willingham. I've been enjoying his work. And here, Tishman, he's, you know, been working with Chaykin, who is a very prolific creator and very imaginative and creative. And now this guy is kind of moving out on his own. And if this is any indication, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he'll do next also, because he's done a very nice job on this series.
Yeah. Well, and I think you hit it on the head. This reads both very well as an individual issue, both in terms of accessibility, the amount of story, and just the enjoyment factor. And it plays into the bigger whole of the miniseries. So it's a great balance between those two.
Yeah, and it really, this is a good example of comics, because it is a very nice marrying of the art and the writing. You know, a lot of times you'll get a comic that maybe the story's a little less good or the art's a little less good. On this one, both of them, at least for me, are hitting on all cylinders. I would give this series and this issue a 5 just because I really like the art. I really like the story. I can't ask for anything more out of this series.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I'm very happy with the story, the art. I mean, this is definitely one of the best comics that I was reading this week. I give it a definite thumbs up. And if you have the chance and you to pick up the earlier issues, check it out. Wait for the trade if you want to. But this is something that I think a lot of people just kind of dismissed based on the concept, and it's worth checking out.
Yeah, and I'm really going to be interested to see where it's going here. You know, they're looking for where the missing time is on that film. Basically, you know, you have this team, this Beatles-like super team, and they have this sort of journalist who follows them around documenting their exploits, and they were repelling an alien invasion, and the film of that is missing some key elements. And part of the mystery of the series is, you know, what happened during that missing bit of film.
Well, and one of the things that I think was a clever move by the writer on it was the story is taking place in multiple time frames throughout the history of this team. And part of the vehicle for that is they're essentially doing a behind-the-music documentary on the team. And, you know, so you've got these guys doing the research, trying to get the real history of the mates and whatnot. And again, when they find this film and realize, hey, wait, something's cut out of it, what was that? You know, it helps move the story along. It's something that, on the one hand, may seem a little by the numbers or whatever, but to me, this is where, you know, the quality of the execution is the key to success. They're taking something that, in the hands of lesser creators, would have been a very boring, by the numbers, simplistic thing, infusing it with a lot of character, personality, and entertainment. It's, again, a really good thing.
Right.
I'm real curious to see what happens next issue. I thought where they left off on this was a good, not cliffhanger, not reveal, but a wait until you see what happens next kind of a moment. You know, a good hook for the next issue.
Right.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure.
It's Ms. Marvel number 34, and this is part of the Dark Reign event. And a couple of guest stars this issue. Spider-Man shows up, and one that's not mentioned on the cover but I enjoyed was Machine Man. He makes a brief appearance.
Yes.
This is one that they did a good job, you know, telling a good story this issue. Definitely kind of middle part of the overall arc. And one of the things I've really noticed with this arc is they've kind of grounded the series and are trying to give it a much more almost realistic and darker feel to it. And by and large, it's working. I think they're doing some interesting stuff with the character and with the series. There are one or two things that, you know, are probably nitpicks that kind of bugged me a bit. The baseball hat Ms. Marvel was wearing throughout the issue, and she's out of costume, so she's just Carol Danvers. But she's wearing a Marvel baseball cap. That was just a little too metatextual for me. Not a big deal, but a little annoying. Other than that, art is really good, really solid. Very happy with the artist on this. And also did a very good job with Spider-Man. Sometimes when he shows up in another person's book, they don't quite get the quips right. They don't have the personality down. This is classic Spider-Man. They had the characterization perfect and made good use of him. So I was very happy with this issue.
I liked it. I'm I'm not sure how this will go over with someone who's new. If this was the first issue that somebody picked up of the series,
yeah,
I'm not sure how that would go over with somebody.
I would agree with that. I don't think this is a jumping on issue.
Now, the last two issues of this, where we kind of flashed back at Carol when she got... And it's been a while since we've seen Ms. Marvel in costume, because the last two issues, when she was a pilot in the Air Force and she got shot down and, you know, she was kind of captured and tortured and she escaped. And, you know, she hasn't really had or used powers in a while in the book. I mean, she wasn't using her powers in this issue, and you have a, not subtext, but I mean, she's kind of implying that she has her powers, some powers she has and some powers she doesn't have, but she's purposely not using them for some reason. So maybe it's that Norman Osborn can detect people when they use powers, or who knows.
It was a little unclear in this issue of, does she have her powers and just won't use them, or for some reason she can't use them.
Right.
And I think they should have made that a little clearer in this issue.
And then as to the costume thing, I mean, if you look at the cover, she's got the leather jacket on and the jeans, but she's got her kind of Ms. Marvel costume under that, and you see the lightning bolt kind of thing. And I know they're doing that to sell the book, but, you know, then on the inside she's wearing a t-shirt with the number 34 on it. I'm not sure if that's supposed to have some kind of meaning or if it's just random.
Well, this is issue 34.
Yeah.
So next issue she's going to shift to a different shirt that'll say 35.
Okay, there you go. Maybe.
But clearly she's not wearing the costume underneath.
Right. But I agree with you on the Spider-Man use. It was overall a good use of the character. I'm liking the series. Not sure how accessible this is going to be, though. And it's the first Dark Reign book that I have read. If it's an indication of what Dark Reign books are going to be like, I'm a little worried for Marvel. Because it's somewhat inaccessible to outsiders.
I read one or two other Dark Reign books that either came out this week or last, and felt they were a little bit more accessible, but if you haven't read the Dark Reign one-shot and stuff, and you read this, you're going to be wondering exactly how it fits into the bigger picture. You know, if you know how Norman Osborn fits into it, then you'll understand or whatever. But, yeah, I agree. The accessibility factor on this issue was probably its biggest weakness.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some concerns about kind of Dark Reign overall in terms of how well it's going to connect and click with the audience and stuff. And just, you know, are they doing too many events too soon after each other?
Yeah, I mean, they seem to flow from one directly into the next. And I've heard people talking about Marvel being inaccessible. I've heard people talk about DC being inaccessible. And I think it seems to flow on whether people in general prefer Marvel or DC. And I can see the point, sort of, because you look at these books, and if you have a general knowledge of the Marvel Universe and, you know, kind of current events to some extent, this seems relatively accessible to me. I know what's going on, but I have the context, you know. But it's just, I look at this and I kind of put it into that mindset of, if I was coming into this cold, I'm not sure how this would go down. Because, I mean, you don't have the hero in costume anywhere in the book.
Agreed, yeah.
The entire action of this issue is sort of, it doesn't have, it's not really concluded in this issue. It's sort of like a subplot to something bigger that's going on elsewhere. So as itself, as an issue, I'm not sure how this stands on its own.
No, that's fair, because I think while you've got action in this issue, the reasons and motivation behind why that action is happening is fairly unclear in this issue. But, I mean, so far as the accessibility thing goes, I don't think Marvel or DC in general, that their comics are inherently more accessible than the other company. I think both companies need to work on making all of their books easier for new readers or forgetful readers to get back into the story.
Right.
You know, that's one of the things that I'm always reminded of every time a new issue of Love and Capes comes out. I mean, that's a quarterly book, but they do a really good job of naming the characters, reminding you of the status quo, and getting you back in. I would also say with Greatest Hits that partially because of the iconic nature of the characters, but also the storytelling, it's easy to get back into that story. Whereas with Ms. Marvel here, while I was able to follow the story, enjoy the story, I couldn't remember a couple of key things things that would have, you know, that nagged me a little throughout this issue. Why can't she use her powers, or why isn't she using her powers? You know, things of that nature.
Right.
They hit the ground running, figuring that you have not only read the previous parts of this story, but you have crystal clear memory of them. And in this day and age, with my, you know, early onset stupidity, that's a bad assumption to be making. So I totally agree with you. This is not a good issue for a new reader. I think it's a good issue of the series. Probably not the best, certainly not the worst. Overall, I would give it a 4 on the strength of both the story and the art. With the caveat, it's probably not a strong 4, but it's stronger than a 3. You know what I mean?
I feel the same way. I mean, I like the series, but looking at it as a single issue, like I said, I'm not sure that I would take this issue itself and hold it up as an example of someone of saying, hey, come check out the Ms. Marvel series. I mean, if you're already reading it, great. You know, but, you know, coming in cold on this one, except for people who are, you know, hardcore into the Marvel universe, and they're probably already reading it, right? Someone who's hardcore Marvel, I don't know why they wouldn't be reading this book.
Yeah. Nope, I agree with you entirely on that.
Okay, and both Ms. Marvel and Greatest Hits were a standard 299 books, 22 pages, so that's 13.6 cents per page on both of those. Our next two books from Image, which is a two-part kind of crossover between Invincible and The Astounding Wolfman, are both 299 books, 20 pages each, which brings them out at 15 cents per page. So our first one here, part one of two, shipping right in the same week, which is nice, is Invincible number 57. What do you think, John?
Overall, I like this. I mean, it's solid story and art, as always. I mean, Kirkman obviously knows how to write a good story. He knows how to pick good artists. There were a couple of pages in this issue of Invincible that featured the Astounding Wolfman. There was one scene that, I mean, it literally felt like it was out of the other book. To me, that's both kind of a good and a bad. It's good in so much as it feels very much part and parcel of that other series, but it's bad in so much as I'm still reading Invincible. And this was a clear attempt by Kirkman to get readers of Invincible to go check out Astounding Wolfman. To me, it's nothing shy of a marketing ploy, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that is a really good point. It is exclusively to get readers of Invincible to go check out Astounding Wolfman, because I can't imagine that there are readers of Astounding Wolfman who are not already reading Invincible.
Even if they are, the fact that this takes place first in Invincible and then leads you into Astounding Wolfman is part of why I think he's trying to get readers in that direction, plus just the comparative sales. But, you know, again, if I were in his position, I'd probably do the same thing. I mean, if I've got one book selling better than another, let's see if we can get readers to try both. Overall, you know, this was a good crossover, but one that, you know, as a true crossover, mandates getting both parts.
Yes.
If you wanted to just read one of the two titles or one of the two issues and not both, I think you're going to be left a little cold, but that's part and parcel of this kind of storytelling, and there's nothing, again, wrong with that nature.
Now, for Invincible readers, though, mm-hmm. and I will say this, as you pointed out, I mean, it reads like an issue of Invincible. I mean, you got some little subplot things of the Wolfman and stuff, but it is an issue of Invincible, and in fact, the issue of Astounding Wolfman reads pretty much like an issue of Invincible itself also. So regular readers of Invincible, even if they don't want to pick up Wolfman on an ongoing basis, just pick up Wolfman number 11, and it's like you're getting an extra issue of Invincible, which you love. You know, no harm, no foul there.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is that much of an infringement in that respect, because they both came out, you know, you pick up that issue. The only place that it's going to really come to bite fans is, I don't know what are the relative numbers between the two?
I would have to pull that up. Give me just a second and I will do that.
The general concept here behind the Wolfman that's been going on is that, you know, this guy got bit by a werewolf and he has become a werewolf himself, but he's decided to take those wolf powers and become a superhero with them, which is kind of cool. And he, in his own series, has this vampire who has been kind of showing him the ropes, and that sort of goes awry a little bit. And he has been accused of killing his wife, so he's out on, which he didn't do it, obviously. He's our hero. He's going on killing his wife. And that's causing some distress for him because his daughter does think that he killed his wife. They touch upon that a little bit in this crossover. And he's also getting trained by an elder werewolf in the better use of his powers, which is kind of interesting also. And we see a little bit more about that in here. So it's an interesting take on the werewolf. He does lose control a little bit under the full moon, not totally feral, but doesn't have as much control over himself under the full moon. But at other times, he does have the power to become this big, strong, can't be killed except by silver, etc. kind of werewolf, which is sort of ideal for a superhero. Kind of an interesting take.
Yeah. Invincible has been selling around the 14 to 15,000 mark, whereas Astounding Wolfman has been selling down in the 8 or 9,000 range. The highest I've got for Astounding Wolfman is issue number 2 at 17,754, and then from there it went down to 13,000, 11,000, 10, 9, etc. And the reason number 2 was the high point is because number 1 was a Free Comic Book Day giveaway. So the only numbers I have for that are for the director's cut, which did about 9,800. So, I mean, he's got, we'll say roughly twice as many readers, not quite twice as many, but almost, of Invincible as Astounding Wolfman. So if this pays off, it could have a decent, bump in sales for Astounding Wolfman, which of course is his goal. Now, one thing I do want to say is kind of my compliments to the art teams of both books. They've got compatible enough styles that, it's a very natural flow between the two issues. There are a couple of books, over at Image that have a different enough style that doing a crossover like this between them would be kind of a hard sell. Whereas here, I felt it flowed very nicely.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, hopefully this will pay off for Kirkman. Hopefully people will give, Astounding Wolfman a shot. I think both books, Invincible and Wolfman, are good books. If I had to pick one over the other, I'd probably go with Invincible, but that's just because I'm more of a superhero guy than a werewolf guy. But I will say that I still think Kirkman's best work is Walking Dead, but I also don't think anything he's done has been bad. It's just a question of, which genre really you like the best.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm similar. I mean, if I had to pick one over the other, I would pick Invincible. But I enjoy Wolfman on a monthly basis.
I enjoy it. The downside it has at the moment versus Invincible is Invincible's simply been around a couple of years longer.
Yeah.
Therefore, I feel more attached to that character, whereas we're still kind of in the getting to know the character stage to a degree with Astounding Wolfman. And I think Kirkman could do a better job on the accessibility aspect of Astounding Wolfman, whereas I think he's doing a reasonably good job on Invincible. But that's personal opinion, and I think if somebody was coming cold to both books, they might have a different view on that.
True.
Having both of them come out in the same week, I think, was a good move. Having on the bottom of the cover of both of them kind of the versus the other title, part 1 of 2, part 2 of 2, I think was a very smart move as well. So I'll be really interested in seeing how these two did and what kind of a bump this issue of Wolfman got, and then how much of it sticks around for the next. But both of these, to me, were good stories. Out of the two, I kind of preferred the Invincible half a little bit more. I would give both of them a 4, though. I think they were solid story, solid crossover, and if you don't mind picking up, an issue of the other title if you're only getting one, I think you'll be happy.
And I don't really even differentiate between these two. I mean, in general, I prefer Invincible over Wolfman, but these two issues here, I thought were relatively equivalent as far as story goes. And it really was one 40-page story split over two books.
I can see that. The question I have then is, how do you think this might have done if it had been a one-shot, at $3.99 or something, that had the whole story under the cover? I mean, I think he made the correct move doing it as he did.
Yeah, I think that, his point here was to get more people to try out an issue of Wolfman.
Yeah.
And you might have got the same story if you read it all in the pages of Invincible. But, you know, if you would have put it all in the pages of Wolfman, I think a lot of people who just read Invincible might have not gone over and read that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or might not have seen that issue.
Yeah. Or even if you'd done it as a flip book of both, I don't think that would have enticed people to go check out Astounding Wolfman's next issue.
And he left it off at a good point, too. Kind of like, okay, I want to see what happens next. The only thing that I'll say is that, you know, for those, you know, 5,000 or so copies, if the retailers didn't order this equivalently, which there's a good chance that they didn't, you know, you might have some people who want to go pick up the issue of Wolfman and are not going to be able to find it.
I would hope, though, that most comic book store managers and clerks are, if they see somebody has one of the two, is pointing them out to the other one. You know, saying, hey, it's a two-part story. Do you want both halves?
One would hope, but, you know.
I'm an optimist like that, and I'll admit that. Actually, you know, if for any listener going into a store and whatnot who only picked up one, I'm curious, did the store point that out to you or not? Or did you hear them point that out to somebody else? Or you know, how good are the stores doing on that kind of salesmanship is my question. So what rank would you give these?
4. Yeah, I'm fine with the 4 on both of them.
Did you have a chance to read anything else this week?
I was doing a lot of catching up on older stuff this week. I didn't read new stuff particularly, with the exception of, I think I finished off the Atomic Robo series that came out, issue number 5, because I had just I drove out to visit my parents in Arizona, so we were in the car for a long time, so I obviously had some good reading time there to spend, and caught up on a lot of old series, and as a result, I read issues 2, 3, and 4 of Atomic Robo, and then issue 5 came out, so I read that. It was an okay series. It was weaker than the first Atomic Robo series, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. I thought each individual issue was okay. I don't think any of them rose to the level of the first, and I think the series overall was not as good as the first. But the first one was, I think, you know, a really good one, so they set a bit of a high bar there.
Yeah. I read Galveston number 2. I had read Galveston number 1 on the car trip. The hype of that series was a lot more than the reality of it. The art is really weak. The story in issue number 1 was relatively weak. It was mostly set up. Jim Bowie and John Lafitte only get to Galveston by the end of issue number 1. The story picks up a little bit in number 2. I think this one will read as a story much better in the trade than as issues, but the art is really weak in this series.
No, that's too bad.
And what else did I look at here? Mr. X, number 1. I read a series from Dark Horse. I liked it. The art was a little more cartoony than I was expecting it to be, and it's, you know, been a long time since I read Mr. X. I mean, it came out like something like 20 years ago or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's been a long, ages.
I remember it being a lot more noirish, and the art was a little, I don't recall, I'd have to go and dig the old issues out and relook at them. I don't remember the art looking the way that it looks here, but that just could be my memory being faulty. I liked the story. The art didn't seem to match the story completely well to me. Let's see, what else did I read? I read Knights of the Dinner Table. That's always kind of a top of the stack for me when it comes out.
I like some of the formatting changes they're making. They're subtle, but they're dressing it up a bit nicer.
Yeah, I mean, Knights of the Dinner Table, we've talked about before. That's a book that, you know, it's, if you're a gamer, this will be a good book for you. If you're not a gamer, I would tend to tell you to steer clear of it. And I think the only other thing I read, kind of checking through, is Contract Solo Missions, Panzer.
Mm-hmm.
I had caught up on my Contract, and I read the Sumi and Jess solo missions in the car, and then the Panzer one came. I liked it. It was just kind of like an action movie, kind of, you know, all-out action kind of thing going on. I liked the Jesse one a little better when that one came out, but the Panzer one was my second favorite of the solo missions. I liked them all, though.
They were all good. The Panzer's accent got a little annoying.
He was throwing out a little bit, you know, it's kind of like the style of it. He watches movies a lot, I guess. So he's throwing out a lot of movie quotes. That was a little distracting, but
yeah, it fits the character.
It's the character and in the context of what was going on. I mean, I liked the fact that, you know, the Merc team that he ended up with were just, you know, kind of like posers and didn't know what they're doing. And he ends up having to save the day.
Yeah, it was fun.
So what did you read?
I've read basically everything I've gotten this week.
Anything stands out?
Nova was good as always. Love that book. They're doing some fun stuff there. Ran Thanagar Holy War, ending of that. Good, but based on some things that have happened during the course of that, I was expecting a few other things. And that seems to be falling into the series of never-ending miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this is, what, the fourth, fifth, maybe even sixth in a long line, going back to the old eight-issue Adam Strange one. They're all good, but it'd be nice to have a little bit more of a, I don't see sense of closure or whatever, but you know what I mean. Not a, okay, what's next at the end of each.
Yeah. Well, this is going to flow into that new Strange Adventures series that's starting up.
Yeah.
I wish they would ramp it back to normal size and just charge $2.99 for it. I mean, at least you're getting the extra pages in it for the $3.99 cover price, unlike what, you know, is happening at Marvel with a lot of $3.99 books that they're, you know, just upping the price and not upping the page count. But
yeah,
I don't know that I need to have an extra long issue of this, you know, Jim Starlin series every month.
Well, and I wish they'd tighten the focus on the characters. They're getting a few too many and a few that I care less and less about. Now, going on to your comment, though, about the $3.99 and how much is too much, you know, kind of stuff. I read Secret Invasion Requiem, which had all of 8 new pages as kind of a framing sequence around some reprints.
Yeah, Marvel really, really screwed us on that one. Because they kept the solicitation secret on that, right? And they didn't reveal that it was mostly reprints until it was too late to to cancel it. If, you know, it was after the final order cutoff, basically.
Yeah, this is something that one of the two issues reprinted was an Avengers one that I've got but haven't read, and the other one was like one of the early stories for Ant-Man, which I may have reprinted somewhere. But you know, I'm glad I read that. They made a interesting choice on where to take one or two of the characters, and I'm curious to see where that goes. And it's something that I think the eight pages of story actually are worth reading, but I think a lot of people won't because of the cover price, and I can't blame them for that. What else did I read that I liked? Immortal Iron Fist, always a great read. This was one of the one shots of one of the Iron Fists throughout time. This time they go into the future. Cool story. And then I read the issue of Batman, which is, you know, one of the two, the second of the two parts tying into the Final Crisis number 6 stuff, and yeah. I kind of see what they're doing, where they're kind of sort of going, maybe, but it left me a little cold. I guess I just like my Batman stories featuring Batman, fighting crime, solving mysteries, and that sort of a thing, and it's been a little while since we've had that. What else did I read that was really good? I read a lot, but a lot of it this week was just kind of more of the same. Ultimate Spider-Man Ultimatum. This whole Ultimatum thing not really working for me. Flip side, I thought the issue of Wonder Woman was really good. Wolverine First Class is an enjoyable read. And I like the Spider-Man Brand New Day yearbook a lot more than I had expected. They did a pretty good job of kind of recapping this first year of the thrice monthly format. And you know, quite a bit's happened. So if you've been sitting that out, you may want to consider picking up the yearbook just as a kind of Cliff Notes version.
I thumbed through it in the comic shop. It didn't seem like something I needed to pick up since I've been reading Spider-Man all along, but I would agree that it did look like something that if you have not read Spider-Man would be a good summary to bring you up to speed.
Yes. Or if you've got early onset stupidity like I do. My memory sucks, so having something like that to where I can flip through and say, oh, that's right, I remember that now. Kind of helpful. Obviously, I got the previews this week, which is just in time for us to be doing our previews call this Friday night, January 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Mountain, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. All other time zones get to figure it out for themselves. And I got a trade, which was the official handbook of the Marvel Universe Volume 6. So all in all, it was a decent-sized week with 42 comics and that trade.
I only got 32 comics, and... And I think you're going to start coming down into significantly.
Once, give it another couple of weeks. Once the November order kicks in, certainly with the December one, I've ramped back big time. I've got tentative plans in place that if they come into fruition, will reverse that trend. But, you know, we gotta wait for that to happen. But yeah, I've already gone through the January order form, because I got that before I had to put in my December one, and tried to use that to figure out, you know, what cuts I didn't want to make in December. And I got my December order to under $190. So, major, major cuts for me coming down the line.
Yeah, I had those 32 comics, then three of those Marvel lead figs came out. All villains, Abomination, Mole Man, and Mr. Sinister.
Cool. No hardcovers?
No trades whatsoever.
Wow, surprising.
No trades, no hardcovers, yet again. I've kind of ramped back on the trades and hardcovers that I'm getting. DC has helped me out by canceling their archives line.
Yeah.
So, you know, I used to always get the DC archives, and now that they don't do those, I don't get those. And a lot of their absolutes and other ones just seem to be somewhat overpriced to me for the page count that you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel, you know, similarly, other than the Masterworks, and I don't even get all of those anymore because they're pumping way too many of them out.
Yeah.
You know, like doing three or four a month, it's making it easier for me to just say, okay, well, I'm not going to collect them all anymore. And once I start not collecting them all, it's only a short step to not collecting any.
Yeah. I think these publishers lose sight of the fact that when a lot of us cut back, we don't make little cuts, we make big cuts. But, you know, hey, their loss. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Teen Titans number 66 from DC, Incognito number 1 from Marvel, and Proof number 15 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.